Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline.ag. The fall is the perfect time to get in on all the sports betting action. Not only are the NFL and college football rolling along, but the World Series is just about here, and the NBA and NHL are just around the corner. Get in the mix at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Hey, welcome to another classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. Every week, we are bringing out some of the most requested episodes of the podcast from behind the archives. We have another great one for you this week, and here's my producer, Sean, to tell you all about it.
Hi, everybody. Producer Sean with another classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. Today, we bring you episode number 402 with Paul Roma. Original air date, February 9th, 2017. This is the first part of a two-part episode that I was not aware existed, and I came across it in the archives, and it's a heck of an episode. You guys are going to be really interested to hear this because Paul does not hold back, and he's got a lot to say about pro wrestling and just his time in WWE and WCW. So you guys are going to dig this. Paul talks about his introduction to the pro wrestling business, training under Tony Altimore, a former partner of Captain Lou Albano, and also being under the tutelage of the devious one, Mr. Fuji, which does lead to some discussions of the famous ribs on the road and just in general in life that Mr. Fuji would pull on people. Also some stories about Harley Race and how he earned Harley's respect, as well as Paul Orndorff, the great Paul Orndorff, a former tag team champion with Paul Roma as a part of Pretty Wonderful in WCW. And most importantly, at least for this episode, I think, you get to hear about the formation and the implosion of the Young Stallions with his former partner, Jim Powers. Paul definitely has a lot to say about that. I gotta say this, Paul Roma, he had one of the best moments. There was a DVD that was put out by WWE back in, I want to say 2005 or 2006, about the Four Horsemen. And they're just, and then the DVD has a lot of, you know, the documentary about the Horsemen as well as, you know, matches and stuff. And they get to the point where they talk about Paul Roma's time in WCW as a part of the Four Horsemen revival in 1993. And everybody else is kind of talking trash about him. And then they bring in Paul. And I wasn't ready for Paul to be on this DVD, but there he was. And he wasn't happy. So if you get a chance to check that DVD out, I think it's, I forgot what it's called. I should probably look that up. But it's the Four Horsemen DVD, the very first one that they put out. It's a good one. And Paul definitely has a big part in that one. So Paul Roma coming up in just a second. This day in Steve Austin history, today being September 26th, we start off in WCW in 1991, where WCW TV champion Stunning Steve Austin fought the natural Dustin Rhodes to a draw. Then we head over to 1993 in Columbia, South Carolina. It's Davey Boy Smith defeating Stunning Steve Austin via disqualification after Austin hit Smith with a chair. And then we go to 1994 in Knoxville, Tennessee at a WCW Pro taping where WCW TV champion Johnny B. Badd defeated Steve Austin via DQ. So far, no clean finishes for Steve on this day. Let's see if his luck changes when we go to 1996 in Saginaw, Michigan for the WWF. Steve Austin defeated Jake the Snake Roberts. There he goes. And then in 1999 in Charlotte, North Carolina, it's Unforgiven 1999, where Triple H defeated The Rock, Mankind, The Big Show, Davey Boy Smith, and Kane in the six-pack challenge for Triple H to win the WWF title, which previously was vacated by Vince McMahon. And Steve Austin was the guest side ring enforcer, who also did some commentary in the match. At one point, he attacked the referees and took over as the in-ring official. And after the match, Austin handed the belt to Triple H and then hit him with a stunner because he's Stone Cold Steve Austin. I get information from the history of WWE.com. All right, folks, coming right up, we've got Paul Roma on a classic episode of the Steve Austin Show.
All right, you guys know me. I love watching college football. The season is rolling along and competition is intense. On top of all that, right now is a great time to get in on all the sports betting action that's out there. Here's what we got this weekend in college football. It's the University of Virginia taking on Notre Dame. USC squaring off against the Huskies of Washington. Texas A&M versus Arkansas. And a big matchup pitting Mississippi State up against Auburn. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, betonline.ag, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code Podcast One. Again, that's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet.
Hey, college football fans, need to brush up on your football knowledge? Then enroll in the Dos Equis College Football College, where you'll learn from brilliant football minds like Jay Cutler, Martellus Bennett, Katie Nolan, and John Bacon, the man who wrote the book on college football. Not only will you win every football argument this season, you could even enter for a chance to win tickets to the 2020 College Football Playoff National Championship. So be the first in your family to earn a football watching certificate from a beer school. Enroll in Dos Equis College Football College at dosequis.com/edu. Dos Equis, keep it interesante. Dos Equis Beer Brands. Enjoy Dos Equis responsibly. Imported by Cervezas Mexicanas, White Plains, New York. Copyright 2019. Dos Equis Beer Brands. No purchase necessary. 50 US/DC, 21 plus only. Enter by 12/20/19. Full rules available on dosequis.com/edu.
This is Steve Austin, Unleashed. Unleashed.
Talked to Paul Roma in a long-ass time. Paul, how you doing, first of all? Welcome to the show.
Well, I'm really glad to be on your show, Steve. I feel like a fan now. I've been out of the business so long.
How long have you been out of business? When did you retire, 98?
I would guess about that, yeah.
God dang. And, man, we just wrestled a few times here and there down in WCW. And, shit, all this time has passed by. I'm going to read a quick email. I got a show email for the Steve Austin show. And I got an email one time, and it said, hey, Steve, Paul Roma is my trainer and has told me nothing but good stories about you two from back in the day. Would you ever consider having him on as a guest? And he said, best, Joe Zimbardi. And I said, of course. Paul and I always got along. The respect is mutual. So anyway, that's how we hooked up this conversation. And I told Paul, shit, I mean, I got this email, and I called Paul. Geez, when was it we talked? Was it November or December?
I think it was December.
I was sitting in a deer stand, and I was talking in a real quiet voice, like I was trying to kayfabe the deer so I didn't scare him away. I don't know what Paul was thinking. He said, this fucking Austin guy's out of his mind. I was in a deer stand sweating my ass off trying to talk to Paul. I said, you know, we were catching up, just trading those stories, because Paul is kind of like I am with a lot of guys. Man, we never had each other's phone number. You left the business. I went my way. We don't have each other's email address, but it's kind of one of those things where, like I said, the respect is mutual. So once we hook up, it's just like it never, you know, just like it was always the way it was. You know, we just turned into friends. But you're talking to me on the phone, I'm thinking, man, this guy must think I'm real weird the way I'm talking. And we finally, I told him, I said, you got to be on my podcast. I said, we'll just sit there and shoot the breeze and talk about the old days, but give me time to get back so I can do my research. Well, I got back to Los Angeles, and now they're remodeling my house. And then, so I'm renting this house next door. Did you get that picture I texted you, Paul?
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, I told you I was having
Oh, wait. That was just now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a picture of my computer on this little bitty, it's like a $20 ottoman you get off the internet. And Paul's laughing at me because he knows the chickens get set up. I'm talking about as a shoot. And I'm sitting in this fucking chair, and I got to bend down because my microphone is so far, you know, away from my mouth. So I went into the damn garage, and we got this little 2-foot step ladder. So I needed something to rest my microphone on. So I got my microphone on the 2-foot ladder. I got my computer in a little box. I'm sitting in this chair that's kind of like a lowrider chair. All they need to do is hit that lowrider music, and it'll be my theme song for the show. Is your life a clusterfuck like mine, Paul? Or now that you're about 58 years old, has all the years in the business made you smarter?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think I'm smarter, you know, and then there's those other days, man. And then I know that's just a lie I've been telling myself.
Goddamn. I want to kind of skew this conversation more towards something that can speak to, you know, the students of the wrestling class or the wrestling program that you help coach, and to be able to just talk about navigating the business, learning things along the way, because I know you've done a whole lot of interviews. I listened to some of those, and I got to watching a bunch of your matches, and man, you had a you had speed, strength. I mean, you had a great physique, very athletic. The way you jump on those turnbuckles, just moved like a cat. And you had a great look. You came in back in the time when, you know, shit, where'd you start? 85, 86?
Yeah, maybe around there. Hell, I can't remember.
But, I mean, it was kind of the wild, wild west back then. And back in growing up, I was in Texas, so I was really cutting my teeth on NWA, Mid-South, Power Pro, stuff like that. And then I started getting more New York right when you guys, along with Jim Powers, become the Young Stallions. And then, you know, followed you from Power and Glory and on, and then you ended up in WCW, and then we crossed paths. Hell, y'all took the world tag titles from me and Regal. You and Arn did at a television tape, and I think it was at Center Stage, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was there or it was in Florida.
Goddamn, was it Florida? It might have been.
Think it may have been in Florida. I don't know.
But anyway, let's go back to your high school days. Because when I look at the way you worked in the ring, you were aggressive as a heel. You had that mean streak. As a babyface, you had fire on your comebacks. Dude, you were really, really solid in the ring. And I'm thinking, this guy was a hell of an athlete. And I had to go back and watch some of your stuff. Dude, what's your athletic background? Were you a football player, track guy?
I ran hurdles for a little bit.
Dude, you on a damn track running hurdles?
Played a little football.
Dude, but you weren't as big back then.
Well, when I tried out for the pros, I was actually about 185 pounds. I was a wide receiver, split end. Ran a 4.5 40, not bad speed, you know, for a white boy.
Pretty good vertical leap?
Yeah. Yeah, I could, at the time, I could touch the top of the square in a backboard.
Yeah, that's a pretty good set of goals. Hey, man, when you said you tried out, where was this at?
I tried out for Chicago. Made it about the third round. You know, basically told me that one coach really loved me. This other guy just didn't want me. No way, shape, or form. So I moved on and got into wrestling.
Well, where'd you play college at?
University. I went to University of New Haven. It's kind of a, I'll make a long story short. I knew a trainer for the New York Giants. He knew about my background, knew how he watched me play semi-pro ball. And he said, listen, you got to go to college. Just play a little organized ball. And I get you a tryout tomorrow. You know, it just, I know you're that good. I've seen you stick people. So I was like, okay, great. So I worked full time, went to school full time, and you know, I cashed in my insurance policies to pay for school, and I couldn't do it all. So, yeah, didn't happen.
So how long did you last in college?
Hell, maybe a year. I couldn't do it all. It was too much, you know.
When you say you couldn't do it all, working full time, what about the books? Were you a good student?
Nah, not that great. Wasn't into the books. I was into sticking people, you know. And that's what they put in my write-up, actually. You know, I mean, they gave me a hell of a write-up and said, listen, I'd go tell him to hit that 300-pound lineman. He'd go whack him and take him out. And that's what I did. So, you know, just it wasn't meant to be. Next thing you know, I was wrestling.
Okay, but I know you come up in the Connecticut area, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where you're still at. And then so back in, when you're trying to cut your teeth, you got into New Haven, a little bit of college, didn't like the books. It was too much. You're trying to work a full-time job. So were you a fan of the business, or did you just look at the business as, hey, man, this is my next way that I can, you know, make a living?
No, I my father had asked me, he said, hey, listen, why don't you, he called me in the room and said, why don't you do this? And he had wrestling on. He goes, you're big enough. And I said, you know, I said, oh, that crap, I ain't going to do that shit, you know? And he goes, oh, I should think about it. And I said, that's bullshit. And I walked away. And I was a marshal, you know, in the system, in the Connecticut system. And a former pro fighter came up to me and said, hey, listen, you know, I know somebody in the wrestling business. I think you should be a wrestler. And he kind of intrigued me a little bit. So I went to a local show for WWF. And, then I ended up joining a wrestling school. And after wrestling school, since they didn't teach you all that much, I really got my notoriety when Mr. Fuji took me under his wing and started training me. And that's really when I got my break.
Okay, but you're training people right now. You also have a regular job. But we're going to get to that. But, you know, according to the thing right here, it says Tony Altamar trained you beginning. But then
right.
Fuji was a big influence or mentor towards you. So what did Tony Altamar teach you?
Just to stand there and look good, a couple bumps. There was nothing really. I mean, taking bumps. I used my athletic ability to, you know, enhance anything and everything I did. Whether it was like when somebody straddled, running across ropes and straddle somebody, they go for a backdrop, you straddle them. You know, I started running over them like it was a hurdle. You know, I throw one leg out, one over the side, like, you know, I was running over the hurdle. And, you know, then I started doing flips off, you know, backdrops, landing on my feet and running up the ropes, you know, walking up the ropes, things like that. And so I just enhanced everything. And then I just kept working on my drop kicking ability. Because I knew I could get the height. I just had to make it look pretty.
Sounds like Tony Altamar was a real old school guy.
Real old school. And he was creating guys for meat for the WWF, for, you know, the
right.
the big names to just chop up.
So how did you come upon Mr. Fuji taking you under his wings? And how did you get into the WWF?
Fuji saw me. I used to go to New Haven when they were in town. And they always tell you, bring your gear. So I bring my gear. And Fuji said, hey, listen, you know, I need some help moving. And I said, sure, man, I'll help you. You know, just tell me when. So he told me. And I said, how about if I, you know, you got to move your entire house, right? You're going to pack it in a truck. So how about if I get some people to help? And he said, fine. Well, all in all, I showed up, you know, and we moved him out of his house. He never expected me to show up. I guess one of the ribs with the boys was, you know, tell him, yes, you're going to show up, and then you leave him hanging.
Right.
So I showed up, and he thanked me. And he said, hey, listen, next time we're in New Haven, get there early, and I'll work with you. So I got there early, and we worked for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and we kept that steady going. And then he just continued on, and he started, you know, showing me different things, teaching me, you know, telling me about ring psychology, and this is, you know, why you don't do that and why you do this, and, you know, so on and so forth. And don't take any, you know, useless bumps and things like that. Yeah. And then I followed him down. Basically, when he moved to Tennessee, I was down in Tennessee working in one of the rings down there. And anytime I was on the road or he was there, we traveled together. Even if I wasn't booked, we'd travel up to New Hampshire or Maine or wherever we were wrestling or that he was wrestling. And he'd get me a deal. He'd say, hey, listen, I don't want to wrestle tonight. Put Paul in my place. So I go in and work, and then he'd critique my match and all the way home. You know, 3-4 hours just talking wrestling, and we just hit it off. You know, I mean, I was that stand-up guy, you know, man of my word.
So were you working some independent shots? Because, you, like you said, you know, always bring your gear with you. Yeah, that way if you got your gear and they call you, hey, man, we need you, so you got your gear. So were you working shots around the area or with a smaller federation?
Yeah, well, they were almost like branch-offs of WWE. Or WWF at the time, Tony would get the deals, you know, get the gigs,
right?
You know, Pittsfield, Mass, and some, you know, even Brantford and all these little places, you know, Watertown and Waterbury and all this. And then we'd go out there for, you know, $25 or whatever it was and, you know, wrestle in front of the people and, you know, try to get your feet wet. But again, still not knowing what the hell you were doing, you know, back at that time.
So when you say that Fuji was a mentor, I mean, dude, this wasn't just a once, hey, I'll help, you know, give you a pointer here or a pointer there. You guys had a relationship and traveled together, and this guy really did work with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we called him uncle. I mean, he told me I could call him uncle, and he says, you know, meant something. And, yeah, he would just every even if we watched the match, him and I together. You know, he would ask me, what do you think of this or what do you think of that? And What did he do wrong here? What could he have done? And, you know, so I just picked his brain just constantly. And I said, you know what, Fooge? We were in like, I don't know, Illinois or something. And I said, you know, I can't get to the psychology thing. He goes, listen to me, you know, in his language, he says, it's just going to come to you. And then you're going to be like, you know, wow, it's that easy. So I went out in the match and, I was sitting in a reverse chokehold and I sat up and I said, holy shit, that's it. And the guy says to me, what? I said, that's it. He goes, that's what? And I said, that's it. That's all there is to it. That's it. And he goes, what the hell are you talking about? And we're having this conversation in the ring. And I said, man, you know, let's go home. And we walked in the locker room and Fuji was sitting there and he looked at me when I came in. He goes, you got it. And I said, I got it. He goes, I knew it. He said, I saw the look on your face. I said, Fuji, all this time, that's it. That's all it is. You know, and I try to explain that to my students. It's amazing. You know, once you get it, it turns your whole life around on, you know, how you look at things and even life in general.
So then what was it as it pertains to the squared circle that made the light go off and you say, okay, I got it. This is what it is.
I just understood ring psychology. I understood how to get the people off their feet, how to control the crowd, how to get them to boo. You know, I mean, I was in the Pontiac Silverdome and, you know, you get 50,000 people, 90,000 people to cheer you or boo you, you know, I mean, and you have them in the palm of your hand. You know, I can't really put a finger on it, but you understand why you do what you do. You don't do like the Lucha Libre where they just do moves that mean absolutely nothing. They're just high spots. You know, every move, every bump means something.
When I first got into the business, you know, when I was going to Chris Adams school, and he didn't smarten us up, man. I mean, because I thought something was up when I got in the business, and, you know, I bought in, dude. I thought pro wrestling was real when I was a kid at 7 or 8 years old. You know, here I am right out of North Texas State. I'm in wrestling school, you know, once every Saturday after they do the TV taping at World Class Championship Wrestling, and this dude ain't smartening us up. So I'm thinking, man, how do these guys do this shit in the ring? Anyway, a few months later, I'd have my first match, and Frogman LeBlanc on live TV or live to tape, whatever it was, you know, I found out that it was a work and you know, how it worked. But still, I didn't really know how to go about having a match. And so all these years later, and it took me, you know, give or take, I don't know if it was a year. I mean, I understood I could have a match with someone that could lead me through the paces, but I didn't really understand. And I'll never forget, and I have it somewhere in my garage. It's a piece of paper, a legal paper on yellow legal paper. And he wrote the formula for a match for me. And he put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, how many numbers there were. But basically it was babyface shine, heel heat, manic comeback, finish. And either baby goes over or the heel goes over. But, you know, there it was right there in front of me, all the little five pieces of a match, and it still didn't register with me, but I did the same thing. It was like, you know, maybe a year in the business or whatever. And then I think after you understand what a match is, then you can take it to the different levels of complexity that you're able to take it to. But I was watching, you know, basketball a while back, and I was watching the Super Bowl this past weekend. And sometimes, you know, like to your students that are in your class, well, sometimes you can think of a match like this. You know, when it's that baby face shine or if the heel starts over on top, you know, sometimes it's a thing where, you know, if you're watching a basketball game and there's that momentum swing and all of a sudden the team will get on like a 12, 15, 16, 20 point run and you're thinking, what the fuck's going on here? The other guys going to get, are they going to start making shots? Well, all of a sudden the momentum turns and so they start making everything and the other team starts kind of blowing their lead. And so if you just think of it as an athletic contest, you know, you're simulating not a real fight, but it's a wrestling match. So you're simulating combat. So you just got to put it in the context of that. But people get caught up sometimes, I think, too much in trying to think of what the high spot should be. But just think of the logics of what you said, connecting to the people and make them come with you and being able to control and manipulate them by what you do in the ring and not begging them, but working them to get them where you want them.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And I learned that in Toronto. I was working with Arn and Tali. And you know, he got me in a hold. And Toronto was tough. They wanted you to move all the time. And they started booing. And I said to Tali, I said, come on, let's go. you know, they're booing. And he goes, now relax, kid. And I said, no, they're booing, man. We got to do a spot. They're booing. He goes, just relax. They'll come, you know. And I relaxed. And he goes, okay, now we go. And they erupted. So, I mean, I had good people around me. I had good people teaching me. You know, since I was connected with Fuji, I had Harley Race, you know, another person that helped me, Les Thornton. You know, I had some really good people around me that, you know, really had a lot of input, which is what I liked. Yeah. So I owe it all to him.
I got to ask you a question about Harley. I got to ask you a question about Harley. But before I get to Harley, Mr. Fuji was the king of ribs, from what I understand. You're riding with the guy, so I'm sure he's not ribbing you. You're kind of his protege. He's taking you under his wing. He's the wily veteran, and here you are, this kid, this young man in the business. So he's taking you under his wing. Did he discuss ribs with you?
Yes, and here's the thing. We're on a flight. We're going to Australia, and he says to me, one of the funniest ribs, I think it was funny, they would paint the boys' fingernails when they went to sleep when we were flying overseas, you know, with nail polish.
Yeah.
So he calls me up to first class, and he says to me, here, and he hands me the nail polish. He goes, go paint Don Morocco's nails.
Oh, no.
And I went, Fuji, please, I'll do anything, but not Don. Please not Don. And he goes, oi, boy son, you want to graduate? And I said, yes, Fuji, yes, uncle, I want to graduate. He goes, then you do, uncle say. You know, because that's how he spoke. And I was like, okay. So I went over, and Morocco was sleeping, and I was trembling, man. I was trembling, painting this guy's nails. So we're in the back of the plane, and Morocco's standing there next to me, you know, and he's a big beast of a man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm like, hey, Don, what's going on? He goes, some prick painted my nails. And I went, yeah, some bitch got me too. You know, he was like, he did. I said, yeah. So I was just trying to get the heat off me. I was like, shit, man. But yeah, no, he, biggest river. I mean, Fuji was the biggest river. Actually, Vince went to Fuji one day and said, please, you know, I need you to, you know, just calm down, slow down on the ribs.
So what'd he do?
He actually did. He actually slowed down on them a little bit. I mean, they're out of control. I mean, what they did to the Rooster, Terry Taylor.
What'd they do?
Well, he came in, you know, and there was this thing, man, about WWF and nobody from, you know, either NWA or down south should right. come into our company and vice versa. So Terry Taylor comes in and he had his Halliburton. He came in a suit. When he went into the ring, they busted open his Halliburton. They cut the, made the long pants shorts on his suit. I mean, they just, and he came in, put him, you know, he had his ring stuff on and he put his stuff away and just walked out like that. I mean, cause you know, if you put the guys over, they're going to just
yeah, you know, so
continue on. Yeah. it was brutal, man. And then Outback Jack, they got him. I mean, they got Fuji, got him. He made the worst mistake he could ever make. He walked down to Fuji at the bar and said, hey, mate, he goes, I bet I can outdrink you. And Fuji looked at him, and you don't say that to, you know, a veteran like him. So they got him all messed up. They took the crocodile off his back. They jumped on his Halliburton and crushed that thing. And they pissed all over all of his clothes. I actually went in the room because I thought he was dead. I really did. He was just sitting in the chair hunched over. I just wanted to make sure he was breathing. Then I left him there and walked out.
Were you ever a big river yourself? Because I wasn't. And I think you're probably like me. I was a little bit of a loner. I had the guys that I hung around with, but I wasn't into being ribbed. I could appreciate a good rib if I saw one or that was lighthearted. But the serious ribs, you know, I wasn't really a big fan of. But were you ever a ribber? Did anybody rib you? Because you pretty much had a reputation for being a guy that, hey, man, you're a man of your word, but you're a guy that doesn't like to be fucked with.
Yeah, no. Like, you know, again, I was protected. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Fuji was the godfather of wrestling. And, you know, the first time he introduced me to Andre, you know, I walked in and he goes, come here. He goes, Andre, this is Paul. He's with me. This is my boy. And Andre said, oh, okay. He goes, hey, you play cards? And I said, no. He goes, okay, sit down. We'll play for money. I'll teach you. And then Andre and I hit it off. And then Ted Arcidi walks in to the locker room and he goes, get out of here. And Arcidi looks at Andre and he's like, what? He goes, I said, get out of here. He goes, well, I have to change. He goes, you go find another place to change. Get out of here now. So he left. So, I mean, if you know, you didn't have a little juice. And I think that's what helped, too, because, you know, nobody wanted to mess with Fuji. I went into Cleveland, and I walk in the locker room, right? I'm all happy. I go to work. And all of a sudden, one of the guys grabbed me and said, hey, Fuji wants you. You better get upstairs right now. He's pissed. So I was like, he's pissed. Like, yeah, man, he's upstairs. You better go. So I go running upstairs and I'm like, what the hell did I do? Right. So I walk up to him and he goes, I said, Fuji, what's up? He goes, what did you do? And I said, what do you mean? What did I do? I just got here. He goes, what did you do? What'd you say about Harley? And I said, I didn't say anything about Harley. I said, I love Harley. He goes, well, you better go talk to Harley. So I was like, holy shit, man. So I go back downstairs and there's Harley, you know, I mean, that was one tough dude right there, Harley.
Yes.
You know, he had grips on him. I mean, damn, man, he could turn the lug nuts off a car, a tire. I mean, he was unbelievable. So he's sitting there and I said, Harley, you got a minute? He looks up at me like, you know, kind of mean and pissed. So he goes, yeah, come here. So we walk into the men's room and, I said, Fuji just told me that you're pissed at me. I don't know what I did, you know? I said, listen, I said, I would never say anything about you, you know? I said, I have nothing but love for you. And he goes, well, somebody said that you said something about me. And I said, I'll tell you what, Harley, you bring that son of a bitch in here and I'll punch him right in his fucking face. And he goes, you know what? He gave me a big hug. He goes, that's all I needed to hear. He goes, I'll take care of it. And that was it. Walked out of there and yeah. So got, you know, the boys trying to bury me, but again, you know, because I had a relationship with Fuji and Harley and, you know, and I told them, I had said to Harley too, I said, you know, you do nothing but help me. We get in the ring, you teach me things. I said, I have nothing but love for you, man. I would never say anything against you.
Purchasing supplies for a business can be a real hassle. You guys know I have my shop and ranch. It can be a chore trying to get everything I need together without multiple trips all over the place. Just keep a track of where you need to go. We'll turn you all around and upside down. That's why there's our friends at Zorro.com, where the number one goal is to make your life easier. Zorro.com, spelled Z-O-R-O, is where you'll find everything you need for businesses of any size in almost any industry. Electrical, plumbing, contracting, manufacturing. Don't sweat it because Zorro has you covered. Zorro.com has tools and equipment, safety and office supplies, cleaning gimmicks, and more from brands you know and trust such as Stanley, 3M, Milwaukee, Schneider, and Rubbermaid, just to name a few. Zorro.com offers amazing customer service from real people based in the U.S. And you'll dig the fast free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Just for listening to the Steve Austin Show, visit Zorro.com/Austin to sign up for Zmail and get 15% off your first order. Again, that's Zorro.com/Austin for 15% off your first order. Zorro.com/Austin. Get it all in one place. In case you haven't heard, WWE SmackDown is coming to Fox. It all kicks off on Friday, October 4th, with a huge 20th anniversary celebration. This event is going to be lights out. Just check out this lineup of WWE superstars and legends. Hulk Hogan, Roman Reigns, Sting, Goldberg, Becky Lynch, Undertaker, Kofi Kingston, Ric Flair, and yours truly, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Oh, hell yeah! It's the greatest night of superstars that WWE has ever seen as a new era of SmackDown begins on Fox. Don't miss the premiere of Friday Night SmackDown, October 4th at 7:30 p.m. only on Fox. And that's the bottom line.
Football season is here, and it's time to dominate the competition with your fantasy picks. And RJ Bell's Dream Preview on Podcast One Sportsnet is your secret weapon to victory.
I said the fact they didn't run it up in week one tells me this guy is so confident he wants to hide his strength.
No matter the matchup, RJ's got you handled with top-notch analysis for the best NFL picks around.
Now, is that true or not? I don't know. very optimistic.
Download RJ Bell's Dream Preview every week on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
To all my gamers out there, it's time to raise some hell and make some mayhem. Shoot and loot your way through a mayhem-fueled adventure in Borderlands 3 for the PC, Xbox One, and PS4. Borderlands 3 features all new characters, including four new playable Vault Hunters, over a billion guns and weapons, and a crazy amount of customization. Play solo or with your friends to take on insane enemies, score loads of loot, and save the galaxy from a fanatical threat. Mayhem is available now. Borderlands 3 on PC, Xbox One, and PS4. For more info, check out Borderlands.com. Rated M for mature.
This is Steve Austin Unleashed.
I understand. You know, I saw him in WWF. I know he's in the Hall of Fame, highly respected. But what gave him such clout in that locker room? What the fuck was it? Because he was just a little guy.
Well, I could tell you a story that I heard. People swear it's true. Fuji told me the story. I have to believe it's true. My understanding was he was a hitman on his island. He was basically a real badass dude. I know that he had neighbors complain about his dog barking every night, and they, you know, call the cops and so on. So Fuji invited him over for a little picnic, and he took their dog and he fed him their own dog. He cooked their own dog and fed it to him.
God damn, I think I might have heard that story from somewhere. Is that a shoot?
Yeah, that's a shoot, man. That is a shoot.
But all the boys loved him. But he was a merciless river. I mean, I think it was done in jest. I think it was just, I'm guessing it was just a total prank. There was no malice behind it. But, you know, some of the ribs can get pretty wicked. Harley Race. You just told me the conversation you had in the bathroom with him. We used to go over to Harley's house when we was working with WCW. And we'd all go over there, and him and his wife at the time, he would barbecue, and his wife would make all these desserts, and Harley was an excellent cook. And, man, there was 10 or 12 of us over there, and we'd be laying around. This is before the matches. And then it was like no one wanted to leave. We'd already been on the road. We go to Harley's for lunch. No one wants to leave because they don't want to be rude. And so everybody's just laying around. And so finally Harley would come in there, and you know how Harley talked because you knew him well.
Yeah.
All right, because Harley never raised his voice. So he'd walk into the living room. Okay, everybody get out. And that meant it was time to go. We'd go back to our hotel room, catch a shower, and then we'd go to the building. We'd work Kansas City. And then we'd go back to Harley's that night and just drink beer all night and shoot pool. But Harley was one of the toughest guys in the history of the business. And Ric Flair always told me that. And sometimes when he would go to Japan to defend the NWA title, but I don't know if he had heat or that he needed protection or whatever, they would send Harley to watch Flair's back. So I had heard that he was a tough man. What made him so tough? Because Harley was a guy that took me under his wing as well. I was supposed to be the United States heavyweight champion down there in WCW, but they put me and Brian together, and we'd become the Hollywood Blondes. I always heard the story. Let me put the nail in the coffin. I heard so many stories, but did you ever see any instances of Harley having to, you know, be a tough guy or handle anybody? Where did the reputation come from?
I don't know. I never saw him put his hands on anybody.
But everybody feared him. I mean, everybody liked him. Everybody respected him. But everybody feared the shit out of him.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I said this, you know, even my students, I said, listen, either you're feared or you're respected, but either one is okay, because chances are no one's gonna fuck with you if you have either one of those. You know,
that's, and that's an interesting standpoint.
And with Harley, you know, I respected him.
Same here.
And you know, it wasn't a question of, you know, hey, here I am, this, you know, young dude, 245. I can kickbox. Yeah, I could box, man. I could take punches. It wasn't about that. It was, you know, the way I was brought up. I respected him. You know, I mean, he put those clamps on my traps a few times and, you know, brought the sweat out of me and made me tremble. But, you know, he's such a great guy. Yeah, he just is. I just think something happened and it carried on. The reputation carried on. You know, like Fuji, the reputation carried on.
What was the deal with his grip strength when you say he had the clamps?
He would catch me from behind sitting down, and he would stick his fingers in my traps.
Right. Yeah.
And I would just let this sound out like this, you know, like that, because I couldn't talk, you know. And he and I said, Harley, man, come on, you know. He goes, so he told me one day, he goes, I get such a kick out of that. That's why he just, every time he saw me, you know, my back to him, he comes sneaking up on me. And he'd do it. And he just laughed, man. You just saw this big mountain of a man chuckling with his shoulders, you know, just going up and down. He just got the biggest kick out of it. Oh, man.
Hey,
good stuff.
When you first came into the WWF and you had to work your way up the card, but when you first came in there, what was the case as far as negotiating for money? Because this is before that, you know, maybe this is before you and Jim Powers, you had become a tag team, and then
right. The
Young Stallion's name was born. But just as far as pay right off Jump Street, how did they negotiate that? Just say, hey, kid, you come in here, because you know, I saw a match he was working with Terry Funk, competitive match, but you were there to do the favor. So what would they tell you back then in the Wild West days, just as far as pay structure?
Well, when we were, they structured it as when you did TV tapings, they gave you $50 because they felt that they were giving you exposure that, you know, paid you way more than you could ever get.
And that's an interesting standpoint for validating a low pay.
Correct.
But and in theory, it is correct. They're giving you television. They are giving right. You television exposure to go do other things. But, you know, you're there to work and you got a mouth to feed or a couple of mouths.
Right. Exactly. You know, then it was just when I got my chance, actually happened. I was at TV in Poughkeepsie, New York, and I walked over to Fuji, after doing a job. And I said, I'm done. And he goes, OK, you know. You going home? And I said, no, Fooch, I'm done. And he goes, I don't understand. I said, I'm done. I said, I had enough of this. I said, I look better than these guys. I could work. I said, I got a great, my body's better than all of theirs. You know, I was that cocky dude. I didn't give a shit.
Right.
You know? And he goes, oh, wait. And I said, no, I had enough. I said, I'm making these guys look great. You know, they look like shit and I make them look great because they're beating me. I said, so, you know what? I had enough. It's not going to happen. You know, they don't want to do anything with me. I'm good with it, you know? And he goes, wait. He says, you know, let me talk to Caesar, meaning Vince. And, he goes, you know, just go home, you know, just don't think like that. You know, let me talk to him. So then, he talked to Caesar and they gave me some bookings, you know, and you pick up, you know, $200-$300 a night, you know, one week I did three shows. So I, you know, I got like $900 and, you know, you figure back in 85 for
that's
a
damn
week.
Good money.
That's damn good money. Exactly. And I said, shit, I could get used to this, you know? And then I just started, you know, getting more and more at that point. You know, if you're going to get beat, really don't get, it doesn't hurt as much because you're at least lining your pockets a little bit.
So did you ever sign a contract that said you would work X number of dates? How did it work back then? Because when they put you and Jim Powers were together, the Young Stallions, they come up with a name, whether it was on TV, Vince doing commentary, whatever, y'all the Young Stallions.
Right.
They'd push you guys a little bit, then not so much, or whatever the run was. You've talked about a million times. My question is, did they ever, back in those days, sign the boys to contracts to say, okay, you're here for a year, or?
No, there was no guaranteed money. Yeah, no, there's no guaranteed money. They signed me. They had me sign a contract, you know, that just basically said they could, obviously, they own my likeness, you know, and all that stuff. I had a big push. They sent me to Australia. SD Jones and I were, and if you would believe this, SD Jones and I were probably more popular than Hogan was here. We were just, he said to me one day, he goes, you don't really understand what's going on. And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, I don't think you understand how big we are, how over we are. And yeah, he took me out and yeah, I found out right quick how over we were. We were on everything. We were on commercial, Toyota commercials and Hilux commercials. And I was on the dating game I mean, everywhere we, you know, hosted, went to nightclubs and they paid us to spin records, you know, and I mean, we had carte blanche in Australia and he was right. And, you know, then you come back to reality, which is here and, and you know, you're back to the grind. But we, Jimmy and I, got our break as young stallions because Zinc and Martel had broken up.
Ah, so they needed another good looking tag team.
Right. So they said, listen, we're going to announce Zinc and Martel aren't going to be here. And we're going to announce that you're going to be running out, going after the titles. And as soon as we announce that, we're going to hit your music. You hit the ring because we don't want the people all pissed off. So that's what we did. Well, Jimmy thought that the Young Stallions, he came up to me, goes, they want to call us the Young Stallions. And I said, okay. And he goes, well, I'm not Italian. I said, well, we're not the Italian Stallions. We're the Young Stallions. He goes, well, it's a rib. And I said, okay. He goes, well, this is bullshit. It's a rib. And I said, listen, if we get booked and we book steady, I don't give a shit if it's a rib. You know, I got a family to take care of. So we went out as the Young Stallions. They gave us a nice little push. I was making more money before I hooked up with Jimmy, you know, doing singles. And then once we started getting the pay-per-views, then obviously I was making a lot more money. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you get more for those. There was no dollar amount set. It all fluctuated. So it all depends on the house. And they put me on great houses. I can't complain. You know, so I was making, you know, a good buck. So I can't bitch about it. And then Jimmy kept coming to the ring drunk. And one of the guys grabbed me one night and he said, listen, I don't want to work with him anymore. He's drunk and I'm putting my body at risk. And so I started doing double time. So I was, you know, doing everything until the comeback. He made the comeback. And then I finally said, I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm wearing my body out. And I told him, you know, he's got to cut the shit. And, you know, he got kind of like a little mouthy, like, you know, you think you're a big deal. And I'm like, dude, I don't think I'm a big deal, but I'm doing all the work. We have a 20-minute match. I'm in there for 19 minutes. Are you kidding me? I said, so you know what? I'm done. So I grabbed Pat. We were at a TV in like Arizona or something. And I grabbed Pat and I said, I can't do this anymore with him. I said, he's coming to the ring drunk. I said, I have a wife, kids, a house. I said, he lives in an apartment. If he loses his job, he doesn't care. You know, that's all he has to pay for. I said, but I lose everything. I worked too hard to get here. So Pat begged me because Pat was the one who came up with the Young Stallions. So he got really, I had a lot of heat with Pat, a lot of heat. And I really didn't know it. I didn't realize Pat was the one who came up with it. So Pat said, you know, please reconsider. And I said, no, Pat. I said, I don't want to do this anymore with him. So he disbanded us. And people came up to me like Demolition and said, oh, I heard that, you know, you don't want to work with Jimmy. And basically it was all my fault. And I was like, well, you know, we'll see the cream will come to the top. You believe what you want to believe. And that was Bill Eady that said that to me. So, yeah, they gave me a little bit of a push. I started making some money and then back on the back burner. Ray was on the back burner. So I just came together one day and I went to the office, sat down with Pat, and Power and Glory was formed.
Hey, let's go back to the Jim Powers thing, because I've heard you talk about the stories about him coming to the ring a little bit intoxicated, drunk, whatever. So when you told Pat about this, you know, why didn't they call Jim aside and say, hey, man, listen, do you have some issues? Or are you drinking before you get here? Or Paul's doing all the work? Or your opponents, the people you're working with, don't feel safe with you? Did they address anything with Jim rather than just fade the heat to you like it was your fault? Because that should have been addressed.
Yeah, it wasn't, though. You know how it was. I mean, you were there for a while. It may have changed when you got there. I don't know. But, you know, I told Pat. I told him right in front of Jimmy. Hell, Jimmy didn't even deny it. I said, the guys don't want to work with him. You know, he's coming to the ring. He stinks of alcohol. And I said, I can't do this anymore, you know. And, you know, Pat just looked at me and said, well, I just reconsider. And instead of turning to Jimmy saying, listen, you know, what the fuck are you doing, man? I put this team together. I want this to work. Nothing. It was all on me.
So whatever happened to that guy? I appreciate the fact that you had the balls to stand up and say, hey, man, you know, fuck, first of all, you're doing 3/4 of the work, if not more. Other guys don't feel safe. But then, you know, just because you you want to be a stand-up guy and don't want to work with a guy who's intoxicated, you say something. That takes a lot of balls. Whatever happened to Jim Powers, because I know you'd go on to Form Power and Glory with Ray, and we'll talk about that, but what did they do with Jim? And was he not in the space of, he might have been in pro wrestler mode where, hey, man, it's a 24-7 party, and he got caught up in the grind, because it doesn't sound like the business was a priority to him. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but you were there. What was his take on things from your perspective?
It was a big game to him. You know, like, he had notoriety. People noticed him, you know, kind of got caught up in the moment. The head swelled up, and yeah, you know, he's bigger than the game. And what was funny was I had gone to a show late, but I called the office and I said, hey, listen, I'm going to be late to the show. Just want you to know. They said, no problem, Paul. We'll let the agent know. So I go running to the ring. Jimmy already hit the ring, and I come running in after him. And I come in. He's like, well, nice of you to show up. And I'm like, dude, they knew. I called the office. They knew I was going to be late. And then, you know, he started giving me shit in the ring. And I said, you know what? This has got to stop, or I'm going to crack this kid. So I said, you know, I'll just let it go. And I let it go. And then he started hanging out with the British Bulldogs. He started coming to shows late, you know, thinking. I said, dude, you're not a British Bulldog. They could get away with this. We're the Young Stallions, man. We can't get away with this stuff. You can't be running, you know, amok with these guys. They get in trouble. They're not getting fired. They're the damn British Bulldogs, you know. And, yeah, he just didn't get it. I don't know. Just didn't get it.
How long did he last in the business after that? Because when he left there, I never heard from him again, unless I missed something.
No, they gave me a push as a single, and, you know, he was just kind of basically on the back burner, spots here and there. And then when I got with, you know, Ray, that was it, really. It was over after that. I didn't hear or see him for probably just at TVs.
When I was watching some of your work, and the Young Stallions, you were really mechanically sound, but I thought you would get even more mechanically sound. And it seemed to me you were really in a comfort zone, in a heel role rather than a babyface role. Am I correct?
Oh, you hit it 100%.
For me, that's the way I like to work too. So why so for you?
I guess because I've always been confident in my ability, confident in everything that I've done, you know, and I try to teach that to my daughter, you know, who's in gymnastics. There's no second place. If you come in second, that means somebody worked harder than you, you know, and that means you got to work hard. So it came easy for me because I was that, you know, I bodybuild. Every show I go in, for the most part, I'd win. I'd walk on stage and just look at the trophies, with one of my buddies and be like, I go, I'll take that one, and that one. Oh, okay. You know, and that's what I would do. So I was always, I should say always used to, but I was very confident. So, you know, turning heel made it so easy. One of the agents, Blackjack or Jack Lanza?
Yes.
I think it was. Yeah. Jack Lanza said to me, when I turned heel, he said to me, he watched my match. He goes, yeah, you know, you shouldn't do that. You know, you should do this and this and this. And I'm like, okay. So then the next night I went out there and I did what he told me to do. And I was very uncomfortable. And then, you know, Kurt Hennig grabbed me and he goes, what are you doing? And I said, well, Jack told me to do these things. And he goes, listen, don't get mad. Okay. I'm going to just tell you what to do. I said, no, please. I mean, you tell me, please. He goes, just be yourself. He goes, you know what I mean? Just be an asshole. He goes, be that guy that walks in the locker room that people hate. And I said, done. And the next night I was on the show and he was on the show and I just let it loose. And I walked out and Perfect stand there. He goes, how'd it feel? I said, it was fucking great. He goes, yes, it was. That's you. That's what you need to be. Be yourself. Don't listen to these other assholes. Man, just be yourself.
Man, that's just great advice because I've told a lot of people that, and that was a big key to my success, I think, early on in my career, as did many maybe people try to emulate someone who was an influence on them. I thought I would try to work like Ric Flair, you know, kind of a cowardly heel. Obviously, he was vicious during his heat, but he was a cowardly heel and, you know, a premier wrestler, you know, one of the best of all time. Yeah, that didn't really work for me when I got dropped on my head, when I turned into Stone Cold Steve Austin, when I basically just turned up the volume of who and what I was as a competitive person in an athletic endeavor. That's when everything lined up for me. I was a mechanic down when we worked together in WCW, and Stunning Steve didn't really have a bio or a, it wasn't a character. It was just a name that Dr. Tom Pritchard had given me. But I, you know, Stone Cold was me turned up to 11 or 12. And speaking about Curt Hennig, when I first walked in those doors, I've told this story before. Everybody's heard me tell it. But, you know, Curt knew me from WCW, and he picked me up. He goes, "Hey, man, come here. I want to introduce you to somebody." He took me into the production truck and introduced me to Kevin Dunn. He goes, "This guy can help you out a whole lot." And he was right. Kevin Dunn did help me out a whole lot. But here he goes again, because Curt Hennig was one of the most generous guys I ever knew in the business. He didn't have any reason. And when I came in theory, I'm in competition for a spot that he's gotten down the road. He was way better than me at the time, or maybe right. forever was. But here was a guy, he didn't have no business helping you if he didn't want to. But that's right. The kind of giving guy that he was, and that was some of the best advice. I think, I'm sure you got a lot of good advice, but that was some of the best advice you'd ever given, and it came unsolicited from one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, yeah. And to this day, matter of fact, Paul Orndorff, I saw him last year in New York, and you know, went over, and you know, we hugged and kissed each other, and I said to him again, I said, "You know, I'm going to bring it up to you again. I remember the day you told me. You called me over, you said, hey, kid, listen to me. You look great. You got a great physique. You could wrestle. Vince will never do anything with you." He said, "So what you have to do is promote yourself. So whatever Paul Roma does every night in that ring, no matter how tired you are or how hurt you are, you give those people Paul Roma, what they're supposed to see." And he looked at me and he goes, "All these years, you still remember that?" I said, "I'll never forget that. The best advice you ever gave me." And let me tell you, those days when I was hurting and I still got out and I had to give him what, you know, I had Paul Orndorff in the back of my head telling me that. And I was a baby face. I did it. I hurt even more when, you know, the next night, but I did it.
And tell me about the conversation with Paul Orndorff, because I can tell you exactly how it went down. He was about 10 or 12 inches from your face. He was staring you directly in the eyes. He was talking in a low voice, and he was very intense. He wasn't yelling. He wasn't angry. But it, when Paul is passionate about something and he's trying to give you a message or wants to give you some valuable information, that's how he does it. Am I correct?
Oh, you hit it spot on. He is intense. I mean, you look like almost to a point where you think he wants to peel the skin off your face. But it's a passion. You know, you could see the difference.
And you feel it. You feel it. And yeah. He's telling you, and what he's saying was right. And I'll never forget, this is before you guys were pretty wonderful in WCW. And I was actually traveling with Paul, because he's the one that got me back into deer hunting when I'd come in from Texas. I'd stopped hunting because I was in a wrestling business now and didn't have anybody that hunted. Me and Paul Orndorff started riding down the road together. We were both working heel. And we'd be driving down the road, and he'd see a deer out in the field. And, man, he'd almost crazy. He'd go crazy when he saw the deer. "Look at that deer. Look at that deer." I'm like, "Jesus Christ, it's a fucking deer." He goes, "You hunt?" I said, "No, man, I kind of stopped hunting because I started wrestling." "Oh, you got to start hunting again." "Oh, well, I don't know where to go." "Well, you can come with me. I got a lease down to South Georgia." So anyway, I got on a lease South Georgia, built a 7-mag. Rick Rude came out there, and we started hunting together. But anyway, here's the story. Me and Paul were riding down the road, and he had worked a singles match with you that night. And y'all probably went about 12, 15 minutes. And I told you this story a couple of months ago when I was sitting at a deer stand. And during that match, you know, he did something to you. And we got a shower. We're riding down the road. And I looked over at Paul, and he's driving. And I said, "Man, there's one part of that about that match you had with Paul that I really liked." And he goes, "Hang on, let me think about it. I'll tell you what it is." He thought for just about 2 or 3 minutes. He looked at me while he was driving with the steering wheel. He goes, "It was the armbar spot." And I'm thinking, how in the fuck did he know that? In theory... An armbar spot may be one of the most boring because he had an armbar applied on you. He had it hooked deep. You were sitting on your ass. Your feet were in front of you. And he had his legs kind of, you know, in that wide stance. And he had that deep armbar. And he had his chest out. And he was looking up. And I said, how in the fuck did you know that? And he goes, that's power. And that's all he said. He goes, that's power, brother. He goes, I had him right there, and I was showing those people I had power. And I said, Jesus Christ. I said, you're right. I said, that was my favorite part of the match. Is that unbelievable or what? Because he was going to flip-flop and fly for you. You were going to make that dynamic athletic comeback that you would make, but that was my favorite part of the match, and he knew it. And I guess he knew what was going through my head.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you're at that level, and that's what a lot of people aren't at. Like, even today, they're not at that level. You know, they think, you know, that you have to set yourself on fire and throw yourself off the top of a steel cage, you know, to get an applause from the people. And that's their high spot. It just doesn't work. You know, it's like Bugs Bunny, right? And Donald Duck or whatever his name is, Daffy Duck, when he blows himself up on stage and the people finally applaud for him.
Right.
And he's like, well, encore, encore. I could only do this once. That's what it's like today in wrestling. They can only do it once.
All right, let's hear from our friends at True Car for Sport Podcast from day one. True Car knows that every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper from when you attempted to park somewhere in Los Angeles. Or the gas you saved by taking a bus all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it comes time to sell or trade it in. Just go to True Car. Simply enter your license plate number and watch as your car's details pop up. Then, just answer a few questions. Navigation, moonroof, power windows. This way you'll know how much of a hit it's going to be so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas. And hey, man, while you're online, you should get your car insurance figured out. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, everybody, give it a go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast, Ride Off in the Sunset. Hey, don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. Also, the best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Cali. If you ain't in Cali, you could be SOL. Don't forget, the King of Attitude shirts are available now at Pro Wrestling Tees store. Check out ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin for those shirts, along with all of my other Broken Skull Ranch apparel. If you're looking for a badass knife, I got two for you from Cold Steel Knives, the Broken Skull and the Working Man. Check them out at my Amazon store. Best price on both knives, Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially Fox, Zorro.com, Borderlands, Trojan, Geico, True Car, and BetOnline.ag. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media. Twitter and Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. Till next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.